Hey, I'm Sean Hammond with PremierGuitar.com. We're at the Valair Ballroom in Altoona, Iowa, doing a rig rundown with Lair Lalonde from Primus. How's it going, man?
Good, man. I didn't know we're actually in Altoona. That sounds kind of cool.
Yeah. So, all right, we wanted to check out all your gear today. I know you have a lot more than this. You were saying you have a huge stash of pedals that you're not using on your pedal boards right now. I know you're a huge fan of those. We actually interviewed you in our October issue, and you talked about a lot of those. But can we run through your pedal boards?
Yep, let's do it. These are sort of the survivors that have made it through the tour so far. The Maxon Phaser, this one has been in my pedal board forever. I'll click it. Basically, it's whenever you want to try to sound like Gilmore, that's the pedal.
Cool. What songs are you using that on?
That comes in just a lot of like open jams where there just has to be some spacey stuff for the phaser. Whenever the word phaser sounds like it's time to kick in, that's the one.
Now, I noticed you got tape, an interesting method of marking your settings on here.
Yeah, this is a system that my good friend, guy named Cadaver, came up with. His theory was tape all the, get your settings, and then instead of trying to like mark the pedals where all the, you know, where everything is, he just puts a piece of tape on with arrows straight up. So as you go through, you notice right off if something's not straight up and down.
Instead of marking where it should be pointing at, just you know they all have to point straight up.
Yep, right.
Cool. So next to that, you've got a Strymon pedal.
The Strymon, yep. That sounds like this. Which, that's the sound everybody needs.
Now, do you find with most of your pedals that you just kind of turn them on whenever you need them, or are you pretty set to, like, on the album I have this sound, I want to use that live?
Yeah, well, this one, there's one song that actually has this throughout the song. It's a song More on TV, where the whole riff basically is. So that's kind of like, it's almost part of the song, the effect. But then our songs have a lot of spots where it's kind of, they open up and it's kind of just goes into different lands. So a lot of times it's handy to, you know.
Cool. So next to that, you've got.
Then this is just a carbon copy, MXR carbon copy that I use for lots of sort of like. And that's another one that we have a song, Jilly's on Smack, that's kind of based on that, that goes.
Now, if I remember correctly, I could totally be wrong, but when we spoke for the interview in the October issue, I think you said you had like three of those or something. Is that right?
Yeah, three going at once. So there's that one, then there's another one over here that's kind of like the go-to solo one that's just like. It's also one that I'll reach down a lot and kind of tweak.
That's awesome. Yeah, you were saying in the interview that you had kind of gotten away from analog delays for a long time, but you got back into them because of these units.
For that reason alone, you know, there was nothing better when you're a kid and you realize you could do that, you know. You're like, whoa, what? And now I subject people to that.
Sweet.
In a large room instead of my bedroom.
Cool. So let's go back to over where we were. Next up, you got a full tone.
Yeah, the full tone is, this is pretty much the first time I've ever had a distortion box on my pedal board. And it was basically just to sort of replace sort of a big muff kind of sound. And then on the album, a song, Hoeing for the Man, we ended up trying to go for a total Neil Young, like really broken up. So this thing probably sounds extremely loud. So it's basically this sound.
Maybe you better double check the levels on this.
Buzzsaw, you know?
Nice. So what drew you to the full tone over, say, a big muff itself?
Probably just the durability for the most part. There's a great store in Los Angeles, True Tone Music, that has like every pedal. So I went in there and tried everything out. It's where a lot of these things came from. And this thing just like couldn't get a bad sound out of it. So full tone stuff is awesome.
Cool. All right, next up.
Okay, the Univibe, and from what I hear, this was the very last one ever made, because I had the also the full tone, the kind of pedal controlled one, but it broke right before the tour. So my good buddy Keo over at Dunlop, he said, I think we have one left, and this was like the last one, because they were out of parts. So yeah, it's just kind of a vibe sound.
Sweet.
But once again, whenever you need to kick it in, there it is. As you can see, everything's usually pretty much maxed out and drastic. It's not very subtle with the effects.
And then is that a custom audio electronics wah next to it?
Yeah, which is actually, I was at the Dunlop Factory, and we have this song called Damn Blue Collar Tweakers that starts with this wah sound. But some reason I could never really, I don't know what I was using at the time. So we went in there and went through all the different pedals and tried them all, and they kind of put together a custom one. I think it's, you know, one half of it's the slash wah and the other one's the dime bag one, which is, you know, switched right here between the two. So it's kind of a customized one, and that's what I use it for. This could be loud. Sorry if it is for sort of this sound. We sat around all day trying pedals to get that sound. That's
cool.
That's the kind of thing we do with our time.
Actually, for the feature, after I talked to you about that pedal, I actually emailed Brian Kehoe, and he gave us some more details on it. So
cool. So it sounds like it was the real story.
Hopefully
he wrote it down.
It was what he said.
Hopefully he wrote it down so we can remember in case we ever need another one.
Okay, so, and below that, we'll show your amps later, but
right. There's
a hint at it. You got the supersonic.
It's basically, you know, clean and dirty channels all I use it for. And then I use the loop, I actually just use as a boost. I just have a cable going in and out, and then just, you know, for really, just as a volume boost mostly.
Now let's look up, I don't want to ignore, I mean, sometimes it's easy to not look at stuff that doesn't really make sound, but it makes it all possible. But up at the top of the pedal board, you've got the custom audio electronics power source, I assume?
Right, yep. That was another thing. I was at the Dunlop Factory, and someone there said, hey, do you have one of these? And I was like, no, but I want one. So they handed it to me. And that thing, it's like, you could definitely take out something with that. It's so heavy that I was like, this has got to be awesome. But it's turned out to be great. It's definitely got rid of a lot of noise.
So it is definitely bigger than a lot of the power sources you see on pedal boards. So you want to tell us about why that is?
You know, I'm not sure why. Maybe just because it has so many, you know, power outlets on it. But it's solid. It's one of the most solid things I've ever used. I've never had a problem, and it looks cool.
Cool. All right, let's jump over to the next pedal board, which is powered by the same thing.
Yep, the same one that I think I actually stole. That one, they sent that one out for less, but he doesn't know it, so don't tell him. The Empress tremolo. That's another one where I sat at True Tone all day, wearing everyone out trying to find like a perfect tremolo that sort of had like a, you know, they had a tap tempo. Which is a huge thing for me now, because it wasn't that long ago where you couldn't really get a good sounding tremolo that had a tap. And this one's, obviously we were just doing something that was going very fast. And then a lot of times I'll just switch it to a setting that's just normal.
So was tap tempo like the biggest thing you were looking for when you decided to go with this one, or what were there other tonal features?
Tonal and tap tempo. I think tap tempo was the biggest thing, because there are so many songs where we're opening up, we're jamming, the tempos are changing. So it's so great to just be able to like tap it right in and kind of get sort of, you know, the Smiths sort of tremolo sound, but in time.
And you guys have enough stuff going on that if it wasn't locked in, it could create a mess, huh?
Oh, yeah, you'd know it in 2 seconds. And it happens. It still does happen, yeah.
Okay, so next to that is the other carbon copy.
Yep, the other carbon copy. That's basically, that's like I was saying, just use it for solos and for doing the old trick of cranking it up.
Okay, and then you've got a TC Electronic. What's that?
It's just a delay. It's a tap tempo delay, which is actually taking place of the Strymon Brigadier right now that I think I beat up too much. So it's out of commission now, so it's this one. This one actually sounds great. It's got a tap tempo, which is another great thing just for, you know, if you're, you know, any band that's jamming a lot. Once again, the tap tempo, especially with the delay, you know.
So what guides whether you choose to use one of the carbon copy analog delays or the TC?
Pretty much I'll use this for like really long delays. If I want something that's like a really like, you know, sort of a really swell kind of thing that has a really long, I'll go with the TC because I have it cranked up pretty well.
And maybe with like more pristine repeats or something?
Exactly, yeah. It'll kind of hold together more than the analog will. And the analog will, I'll use more for just like short ones for soloing, so it kind of has a vintagey sound.
All right, next up you got a Mutron. What year is that?
The Mutron, this is actually a reproduction. It's so funny because I was, I didn't have one for the longest time, and a lot of our old albums have envelope filter, and I just never ended up with one in there. Then the last tour, we were talking about something about Jerry Garcia, and they're like, hey, you know, getting that sound. I'm like, I don't have an envelope filter anymore. So right before, I was going to go down to True Tone and try out a bunch of things, and then our road manager for my birthday handed me this one. And it sounds killer. It sounds just like Garcia.
So this is a modern reproduction. Like how new?
Like brand new.
Really?
Like I think you can go in and buy them off the shelf right now.
Cool. And they're like exactly like the old ones?
You know what? I'm not sure. It looks exactly the same, which was cool. The greatest thing was, is I was like, oh, I'm going to get I'm going to get the one that Garcia had, the Mutron. So I went online, you know, trying to find a used one. And I was like, you know, it was like $800. I'm like, oh, maybe I won't be getting one of those. So, and then the last second I saw that they were reproducing them, and, you know, Mutrons look so cool. So I'm assuming it's pretty close to the same.
Cool. Next up?
The EBS. This thing I've had in my pedal board for probably as long as Primus has been around. It's just a
Is that the Octabass?
Yeah. This sounds like it probably needs an adjustment right now, but you know, trying to go for the Jimmy Page old school octave.
Now that's actually from their series of bass pedals, right?
Right.
Why did you choose that over like their several other
because
octave pedals?
I didn't know any better. And I was like, oh, octave pedal, cool. I was going through them all, and I didn't even realize it was a bass one. I just tried them all, and that it was kind of between that and the Boss one. And this one, it's hard to find an octave pedal that kind of holds together, you know, that doesn't start breaking up. So this one was the most stable together one.
But this one's lasted for 15, 20 years?
Yeah, man, that thing's been in there since, it's a long time. I don't know how long you've been making them, but as long as they've been making them, probably.
Wow, cool.
That's the oldest pedal in the thing.
Okay, next. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, and then the ring thing. Yeah, this is basically a ring modulator. I go between this and the Way Huge Ringworm, which that one, though, I think I took it out the other day from because it gets stomped on a lot. So it's basically just a ring modulator. Robot sounds. Everybody has to have robot sounds. So it's basically that, and there's a lot of sounds in there. Who doesn't need that sound?
It's a staple, man.
Everybody loves that.
It's a staple. You gotta have that one.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, are you a pretty hard stomper? Because you've mentioned how, like, you've kind of put the ringworm and the Strymon Brigadier out of commission.
Yep. Yeah, I'm finding out that some of them get beat up pretty. There's a lot of things where I'm switching things so fast that I tend to, like, stomp on them a lot. Which that's why Adrian and I have been having a conversation lately about getting some kind of like switching system together so I don't have to be...
Some sort of MIDI thing or something?
Yeah, MIDI thing, so I'm not jumping up and down on the pedals. You know, you think after playing guitar the song, I would realize, oh yeah, you're stomping on this thing. It might break.
They're called the stomp box.
Yeah. See, right.
Okay, so next to that, you've tell us what else is going on here.
It's just an A-B. It's going between the tuner and the amp. So if we have to switch guitars, you know, that kind of mutes it. It also goes the tuner. If I got a tune real quick, it just...
Do you have a rack tuner or something? Or
We have that one.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a nice segue. Let's turn around, look at the amps and what you got going on over here.
The amp's supersonic. It's the 60-watt supersonic. I know they make 100 now. It basically came about, I was out at actually getting this guitar here out at the Fender factory, and I was talking with the guys, and they're like, well, what amps are you using now? And I've used Marshalls forever. So this album, it was kind of like, hey, well, we should try some different things. And so I was calling different amp companies, and a few people sent me different things. And so when I was talking to the Fender guys, they go, well, we have this supersonic amp. It kind of sounds sort of similar to what a Marshall does, but even kind of like more vintagey. So I ended up bringing it to rehearsal, and everyone loved it, and it kind of was really punchy and clear. And
Yeah, you talked about that in the interview we did a few weeks ago, too, and you said that you had tried the 100-watt one, too, and you liked it a lot, but it just didn't seem to really fit in with the band mix.
Yeah, we're starting to figure out why now. It was like, at the place, the 100-watt sounded awesome, had a built-in reverb, but we're finding out now that it's like, you know, the headroom, but you know, it sounds great when you crank it, but then when we get here on the stage, start cranking everything, all you're going to hear is guitar a lot of time, which I don't know what the problem is with that, but.
So is what you're saying that in order to get it to sort of the sweet spot, the 100 watt would have to be way louder and therefore everyone would get pissed at you.
Exactly.
So the 60,
yep.
The 60 watt could get to the sweet spot.
Yeah, we're finding out that we're going to, that these things, these supersonics, the more you crank them, the better they sound. So we're even going to, at some point, put something in between the head and the cab, just sort of like so we can really crank them and then just control the volume.
Like an attenuator or something?
Yeah, that's our next step. I think that will be happening any day.
Oh, cool. You're getting pressure, I can tell.
Yeah. After you get told to turn down enough times, you're like, oh, man. So Adrian had the great idea of putting that in there. So I'm excited to see that show up. Then we're going to start cranking this thing up.
Well, tell us what's going on up here. Like, so you got your tuner up here. You got a Korg.
Yep, got the Korg. I don't know if this is the Buzz Phaeton one. Seems to be sturdy. We've always been using these Korgs. I had the Korg rack mount forever, but then I put it in my studio and it's kind of too lazy to unscrew it now. So we're going with these. But yeah, it's solid. We've been messing with the gain a little bit because venue to venue, sometimes as far as like all the lighting, you know, we've got the screen, we've got these astronauts. There's a lot of electricity flying around, so sometimes you'll start getting a lot of buzz. We've been finding different gain settings that sound good but don't buzz too much. I use a clean channel, dirty channel, and like I said, and then just I use the effects loop for a boost. It's pretty simple.
Which channels do you find yourself using the most?
I use a lot of just the dirty channel, and I'll control sort of the cleanness of it with the volume on the guitar.
You're getting most of your distortion, your standard distortion, other than like the fuzz type stuff through that.
All the distortion through the amp. That's what I've always just used the amp distortion. That's why it's rare that I have like some kind of fuzz box in my chain. Usually I don't use any distortion. It's always just the amp.
Yeah. Tell us, you have an interesting story about how you arrived at using these cabinets. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it ended up because I'd got the supersonic heads and then I was using it with my Marshall cabs. And it sounded awesome. Like, this is great. And I was talking to the Fender guys. They're like, yeah, that's killer. You're using the heads. You like them. But, it turns out, they also, this is part of their company too, the EVH. And they're like, would you be open to trying out these cabs? And I was like, sure, and I kind of expected it to be sort of a new school, like, kind of crazy, I don't know.
More modern sound.
Yeah, just some more modern cabs. So I was like, I'll try them out, whatever. So I plugged it in and it sounded incredible right off. And that's where I kind of found out that, Eddie Van Halen had sort of like was really a stickler on nailing his old Marshall cab with this thing. So all the hard work he put in is paying off for me.
And one of the things that you liked a lot, I think you said earlier, was the speaker selection turned out to be really similar to what you had in your Marshall cab.
Right.
That one you can't find anymore, I think,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Yeah, I had a 25 watt speakers. I had a cab. Yeah, it was loaded with 20 watts. So it was 100 watt. Cab and no idea where whatever happened to it, and I haven't been able to find another one since. 30 seems to be the lowest I can find, and that was just, it all came together like so awesome. I was like, it's got the 25s, it's like,
yeah, those are stock in these, right? The 25 watt, and there's
trying to find actually, someone said, hey, try this out, and it turned out to be the one. So yeah, those are the stock ones. I think that the speakers are actually, they're the only speakers are made for this cab. They're not like a 25 watt selection that's made and they put in other cabs. They're only in the Van Halen cab.
Cool. Let's talk a little bit about what you chose to mic these with. These are Sennheisers, right?
Yep. I think, are these 414s? I'm not sure. This is Jason's world here. It's for me, anything beyond a 57 is out of my realm of knowledge. So this is what Jason, our sound guy, ended up going with. And
you're pretty happy with how they sound in the house?
Yeah, it seems to be really good.
All right, Lair, so we've got your guitar boat here. Why don't you tell us about all these?
This is my main guitar that I use as much as I can. It's my favorite. It's got my favorite neck of everything. Basically, it's just a brand new American Deluxe. It's got the
S1, I think they call it.
The S1 switch. It's just super solid. It's got the locking tuners, which saves my life. It's got the newer style kind of trim. The pickup, can't remember exactly what it's called. He tells me all the time and I forget what it's called, but they all sound awesome. It's just a really great guitar as far as a brand new guitar. This is one of the things when I was out at the factory that they showed me to like, check this out. And I was like, oh, this is awesome. This is perfect. So
I think, didn't you say that you ended up, after you chose this, you ended up choosing the pickups to put in one of your older guitars, right?
Yeah, I ended up, I wonder if that guitar is probably not here. Yeah, but I have, see now this guitar, because I have a 76 Strat that's an old green. Mm-hmm. So basically, but I didn't want to bring it on tour because I didn't want it, you know, someone to walk off with it. But
so did you have this made to sort of replicate it?
Yep, I went in and I was like, talked them into making me the sparkle green. Mm-hmm. They were very kind to make this thing. So yeah, the guitar that this is sort of a replica of, I ended up putting that same pickup back in. And
did you carve it out with a knife, with a steak knife, one, to get the pickup in?
This one I didn't have to; it was already done. But if it would have needed carving, that would have been my go-to tool. Would be the steak knife.
That's for whoever is watching and wondering what the hell we're talking about. Lair tells a pretty funny story about back, what, in the late 70s or early 80s when you decided to put a...
It was in the 80s, yeah. I was at home. I don't know, I was probably like 16 and had to put a humbucker in my guitar. And so I opened it up. It didn't fit. So went in the kitchen, found the steak knife, and it fit eventually. I think that's how I got the pick guard routed too. And then, you know, moved the wires around until sound came out the other end.
And no hospital trips or anything in there?
No. But almost on one of my amps that I tried to fix myself. I found out you're supposed to unplug the amp before you start messing with the wires.
Now, you also installed your own Floyd Rose at one point, right?
And I did, and that turned out to not work out so well.
Is that the guitar that you were talking about that when you guys were on tour with Alex Lifeson, that he played it, and he's like, you actually play this thing?
Yeah, because I had the action was so high in it, because my theory was I was playing a lot of slide, so I figured the higher off the neck, the easier it was going to be to play slide. Yeah, and I'd gotten so used to it. Yeah, Alex picked it up, and he was like, you actually play this guitar? This is the guitar you play. And I was like, yeah, what do you mean? And then I played one of his PRSs, and I was like, oh, okay, this is much easier.
Speaking of slides, I noticed you had one on top of your head earlier. Is it just Pyrex slides you use, or?
Yeah, it's the whatever the Dunlop 202, I think it is. I'm always trying to remember the name because when I talk to Brian, I say I need a slide. He's like, "Which one is it?" I'm like, "I don't know. It's the
clear one."
Yeah, the clear one. Yeah, no, I kind of came to that thought because I was at some point was worried I was going to get shocked if I had a metal one. I don't know what.
Can't be too.
Lots of gigs with bad grounding will instill that in your brain. Yeah. This is sort of like the same guitar, just a different.
Cherry Sunburst?
Yeah, it's like a Cherry Sunburst. The other one's Tobacco. Pretty much exact same guitar there. Then the this one that they were very nice to replicate my guitar that I didn't want to bring out. And this was actually the first guitar they gave me to check out.
Now, the one that they replicated, sorry, back to the green one, just real fast before we move on. The original is like a
76. Okay. And it was just one that I found in a store somewhere and had laying around, and one day just pulled it out of the case. Hey, we plugged it in, and it turned out to be like one of the best sounding guitars. You know, when we did the album, it was like that guitar, my 69 Tele, which was another one we didn't expect to be the guitar.
That was one you almost sold, right?
Yeah, it was actually in the guitar store. Like I didn't want to hold on to it anymore. So I was like, can you just sell this thing, man? I don't want to store it anymore. I never play it. So he cleaned it up. I went in and saw it sitting there. Was like, yeah, I think I'll take this one back now. Cool.
All right, so what do we have here?
It's sort of the Tele version of the... of these. It's American Deluxe with the S1 switch also. We've been going back and forth with pickups. Right now it's got this Seymour kind of hot rail sort of thing. I think we'll probably settle on this one. It sounds really good. This guitar is really, you know, it's got a Tele sound, but it's also it's a little bit hotter sounding than normal Tele.
So do you use this on specific songs or just when you're feeling like being a little twangy or what?
I use this on songs that normally that I don't want to have the play and the trem, that I want to just be really solid so I can hit things or bend things and not have to worry about the trem coming into play. So sort of that's what this is based on.
Is this a custom model or did you?
This is basically the only thing custom about it is they shaved the neck down a little bit because it was really fat when I got it. But now this is their sort of stock other than the pickup, American Deluxe.
Cool.
Guitars has the locking tuners also.